Hello and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore along with Josh Arnold and our producer and engineer Bill Poposky. In the background, you're hearing a little Night Heron. That is the music of the English department head at Gloucester High School, Mike Tells, on Trending Now, Unfinished Music this week with Greg Verga, and elsewhere on our front page. You can find that concert with Mike Tells, which was live. So there you go. Night Heron is the stage name. We're back with Trending Now after a few weeks off. Hello.
Hello.
Sup?
Well, we had opening day yesterday for the Red Sox.
I'm screaming at the television. Honest to goodness, I am screaming at the television when Kelly walked the first guy. I said, get him out. He doesn't have it, okay? Get him out. He's wild. So he walks the ballpark, and then the next guy comes in, and you're just seeing, okay, this is, they're going to lose this game.
Yeah.
And six runs to Tampa Bay. Dear, oh my goodness
they
gracious.
They played Tampa Bay 10 times in April.
And Tampa Bay.
I remember back when Lee Smith was the closer for the Red Sox, and the big hype about him being the closer, and first game, he blows the save, opening day. Headline on the Herald, back page, wait till next year.
Well, it's just that we've seen so much of this over the past few years, and it's like, come on, guys, you got a stack bullpen. It's the first game of the season. You're up 4-0, then 4-1. Get him the bozo out of there. And Smith, you could see the same thing. Plus, the umpires were squeezing him. They were squeezing Kelly. So, you know, just, oh, my word. And every game counts. I don't know. Well, they won't be going unbeaten, will they?
Well, you won't what?
They won't be going unbeaten.
No, the
All right. So what do we got lined up for today, Josh?
Dr. Diane Robert Stoller is a licensed clinical psychologist and neuropsychologist, and she has written a book about coping with concussion and mild and traumatic brain injury. She's going to be our first guest and talk pretty much for the first half hour. We also have Christine Cuccinello, who is a who's created a nonprofit called Rising Above Addiction, and it's to help people who are trying to break the pattern of addiction and put their lives back together.
Okay, so we've got that coming up here in just a few minutes. Stay with us. This is Trending Now with Josh Arnold on MSONewsSports.com.
Friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student-athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Dr. Diane Robert Stoller. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the invite.
Well, we usually start out with tell us a little bit about your, give us a bio. So why don't you start there, and then we can get into some of the questions and about your work.
Well, I'll give you, I think when we talked the other day, and I was telling you that I came from very humble means. I worked 2 or 3 jobs to go to college. I went to Tufts, BU, and Harvard, and I got my doctorate in neuropsychology I'm board certified in health psychology, and I'm also board certified in sports psychology. And then in 1979, I opened the first integrative practice in New England, where I had neurologists, psychiatrists, endocrinologists, I had psychiatric social workers, psychologists, and I also had physical therapists, speech and language pathologists, I had Reiki, polarity, and acupuncture, all working in three different locations. And our focus was on trauma at the time, and also sports psychology, performing, and some of the areas that we always were working on is anxiety. I did my doctoral dissertation in autism, and I came prior with some of the jobs I was, as I mentioned to you, is that I did special education. I was an auditor for special needs. So I worked with ADD, dyslexia. So that was my background. And that was 1979, and by 1990, I also was a mother of three children. I had two 10-year-olds and a 7-year-old, and I was driving and had a cerebral bleed and passed out, had a 60-mile-an-hour head-on auto accident, and 5 months later had brain surgery, and after 4 years, by 1994, I was told by every single doctor I was permanently brain damaged. I would never walk, talk ever again. And I lost my practice. I couldn't be a mom. I could barely be a mother. And I was just sitting there not functioning and didn't know what to do. And I asked for guidance. And, you know, with the holidays coming today is the eve of Passover, and also Sunday is Easter, I asked for guidance. And the guidance I got was that to ask the people who I had been working with. And I did, and we started doing acupuncture, and I learned about Igor Bodenko and his water therapy. And by 1997, I had written my first book, Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, and I was back to work.
Wow.
And I became a professional speaker also at that time. I was seeing patients.
Well, that's quite a journey. Tell us about what it took to get you back from the diagnosis of never walking and talking
again. Well, I'm
going to
go on a little bit more, Josh, is that what happened in 2005, I got Lyme disease, and then 2008, there was another auto accident, I had another concussion, and that's when they found I had a brain tumor. And then there was in 2010, I was in a zero-gravity chair, had another concussion. And then recently, as I mentioned to you, in 2015, I was diagnosed with one of the rarest forms of lymphoma that you've ever seen. I have primary hepatic lymphoma, and I have aggressive cancer on it. I have Hodgkin's, non-Hodgkin's B cells and T cells. So to answer your question is that the team I had, the nutritional educator, Martha Lindsay, who's on our team, Igor Bodenko, my dear, wonderful mentor who taught me hypnosis when I was in my doctoral work, Dr. Eugene Izzati, who's still alive, he's 93, and he's still been my mentor for 50 years, he taught me hypnosis. So through using the various techniques, and then I came upon neurofeedback. So between neurofeedback, hypnosis, water therapy, changing my diet, Reiki, polarity, acupuncture, and psychotherapy, of course, is that I am back. And this is in my both of my books. I talk about this. I give conventional methods, alternative, complementary, and learning about homeopathics. I had a very weird type of headache. I thought I was having another stroke. It's atypical migraines that happen after brain injuries. And my whole right side would become paralyzed. I had slurred speech. I thought for sure I was having a stroke, only to find out it was an atypical migraine. And all these, my stories and other stories are in both of the books. The older book, as I said, it came out in 1997, is Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. The new book came out in 2013. That's called Coping with Concussion and Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. And in it, all the different, for every single symptom, but the number one symptom of brain injury is headaches, and then we get into sleep issues. And so what are the conventional methods for dealing with sleep? What's complementary? How it can be diagnosed, and also all the alternative methods. And, Josh, I kind of distinguish the difference not because of one is better than the other. It's based on if insurance will pay for it. I mean, everybody, well, for most people, you can get physical therapy and it's covered under your insurance. If you go to a homeopathic doctor, 99 times out of 100, I would say almost 100%, it is not covered. So that's why it's called under alternatives, not... And some of the other methods, which we talked about the other day, is there is an FDA medical device called a cranial electrostimulation, or CES device, that is FDA approved, and yet no one knows, and it is specifically FDA approved for anxiety, depression, and insomnia, but people don't know about it. So, yeah.
And why don't they know about it?
Because the pharmaceuticals. I can say I'm blessed. I have patients who are from the major farms who have come in and told me what they do. I mean, is the taking the lobbying, the you know, from the doctors to the senators to, you know, the pharmaceutical companies and the advertisements on television. I mean, no one has ever watched... I mean, neurofeedback's been out for almost 40 years, and I don't think anyone's ever heard on a radio or a television what neurofeedback is about. Same thing with this device. This is an FDA-approved, and going back to the neurofeedback equipment, all the equipment I use and everything we use here is FDA-approved. They've all been double-blind, proved that they do what they're supposed to do, yet because of poor marketing. And... part of going back to what I do, I work locally, nationally, and internationally so that people can call me and contact me. I do a consult with them, look at their symptoms, and then I look at what causes that symptom. And a perfect example is when I talk about symptoms and causes is you can have a runny nose, and you do have to treat the runny nose. Like right now, I'm going into my allergy season. But I shouldn't be given an antibiotic, you know, if it's an allergy versus a virus or bacterial infection, which is causing it. So I help people discern what is, look at their symptoms, look at the cause, and then I come up with a recommendation of treatment for both the symptoms and the cause. And I can do this, as I said, locally, nationally, internationally, and I have enough contacts locally, nationally, and internationally to refer to people. So I'm not doing the treatment. I can refer to someone in Cleveland or in New Zealand. Someone called me, contacted. We did a consult in New Zealand, and I know Martin Brink, who does neurofeedback in Brisbane. And so the person got to see someone there. So it's looking at the symptoms that people are coming in with related to, and going back to what, when I came back to work, I really defined my practice to brain health. And so either I'm doing brain rehabilitation for concussions, stroke, ADD, chronic pain, anxiety, sleep, or I'm doing brain fitness for the elite athletes for, and I don't, when I say athletes, it doesn't have to be, there's high school, college, but I've worked with the Ironman, the Olympic athletes, but also performing artists like on Dancing with the Stars, and also executives who are not sleeping or not being focused. So we do both brain fitness and we do brain rehabilitation. And the other day you asked me, what happens if one of my athletes gets injured or gets a concussion, then they go in brain rehab?
What, there's a, not, no pun intended, but there's a greater consciousness of concussions now in athletes, in competitive sports, so more and more of the unions and
absolutely
are pushing.
Is that Amagi, who was at BU when I was there, and her research is in CTE, and that's chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Right now, the only way to diagnose it is upon death, and she, what we were seeing with these athletes, you know, like the boxers and the football players who have repetitive, and I'm talking about repetitive, like Gronk, you know, we're talking about repetitive brain injuries, is that what happens is the layer, the outer layer of the brain lets go, and this protein called tau, T-A-U, comes out, and it's like acid, and it eats away the brain. It just literally eats away the brain. I have a picture of it in my book, and but you can't diagnose. And this was the same thing before with concussions. Now, I'm going to really qualify for your audience the difference about brain injuries. People say, well, I know a relative who had a coma, and they obviously they had more severe problems. The answer is, the symptoms of a brain injury can be very severe across the board. What's the difference between a concussion, mild or moderate or severe means? It's how long a person's been unconscious. So someone who's been from brief to 1 hour is called a mild traumatic brain injury or a concussion. From 1 hour to 24 hours is moderate. From 24 hours to beyond is severe or also called coma. And I've had patients who've been in a coma for 4 months who do not have as many symptoms and severity of symptoms as someone who's only been knocked out briefly. And that's the one of the misnomers that people, you know, they say, well, it's mild. It's not too bad. He had a mild head brain injury. And that's another thing. People used to call it a head injury. You can crack your skull and not have a brain injury. And you can be sitting in a car and not injure your skull and have a brain injury from a whiplash. So the brain has been accelerated and decelerated inside the hard skull. So many times kids will be playing in the play yard, and they come down the slide, they've hit their head, they've had a brain injury, but and then they go to their mom, and they're crying about their cut arm. The mother hasn't looked at the head and didn't know they knocked themselves out. And so later on, those kids who now go into peewee sports, that they allow them to play football with helmets at 6 years old, and now then when they go into school and some teachers, they test them and they say, oh, you have ADD. Well, actually, that child has had multiple concussions and the symptoms are from the concussion, not from ADD.
Wow. What do you see as the emerging climate as far as sports goes in relation to concussion protocols, and how does that going to trickle down into, say, college sports, high school sports, and what does that do to the industry? I don't mean just football or professional football or what have you, but it has a trickle down effect in terms of physical therapists, trainers.
First, what they're doing now, I mean, and I'm going to give both sides, is one, they're looking at a urine test to see, and there's the impact test. The only thing about the impact test, you have to get a baseline, and we're talking about someone 13, 14-year-old and above. You're not talking about that 10-year-old who's on their bike and gets knocked out. So, and they don't tell their mom they fell off the bike and hit their head. Or the kid who's in the car who has had a whiplash. And I have a family, there was a five, all of them were rear-ended, and they all had concussions in the car. But the fact that the other kids went on to play sports, and answering a question. So right now, there's still the closest thing that they have, the CAT scans that many people go, it's a question if they have a concussion, really is not good. It's only good for if there's a major bleed or a tumor. The typical MRI, T3, T4, really doesn't show it. And it's the more expensive equipment, which is standard in Canada but not in the United States, is the SWI, single-weighted MRI, and DTI, diffuse tensor imagery, what is that's for is to look at the electrical system to see if there's been a tear or a shear. This is the only one that you can see. But if someone's saying, I'm just a little bit dizzy, I'm feeling okay, but they don't report that they've had other knocks to their head, or maybe not even knocks. This is what I'm trying to say. That kid could be sitting there, and their parents rear-ended, and the movement of the whiplash, if they've had prior brain injuries, is causing more brain injury. And I'm going to throw one other thought into this, which is a sidebar to it, is that everybody's walking around with their cell phones up to their head, and that's emitting EMF waves. The old traditional phones that you used to pick up, you put to your ear, was fine. Then came the mobile phones. Those were fine. But then the flip phones are still fine. Those are all on radio waves. The new cell phone, the smartphones, are EMF. That's like putting your head into a microwave. So now, and I have a blog on that on my website of drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. And this is where we go back and look at your history. This is what we look in the consult. How much of your symptoms have you had multiple brain injuries that you were not aware of, that from different sources? Did you have at birth, did you have not enough oxygen? Did you have an infection? Did you have anesthesia, which causes cognitive impairment? So all these things, and going back to the sports, those children should not be wearing helmets because they're running faster and their necks cannot support it. You know, you think of rugby. If I hit your head and you hit my head, we both can feel it. You going in with a helmet, you're not feeling. So going back to the question, we have to get helmets that, you know, can really protect the head, and so it's not going back and forth. Young children should not be doing that with any kind of equipment. And, you know, so I feel very strongly about that.
Well, I've seen the, you know, you watch football games now on Sunday or Saturday or whatever, if you're watching an NFL game, and this, if a player hits you with their helmet,
yeah,
and they believe it's intentional, it's a penalty. And I yeah. guess... you know, to my way of thinking is, if you hit somebody, like you hit Gronk and he has to leave the game, the guy that hit him ought to leave the game too.
Oh, I agree. No, I mean, it's no different than if I walked into a store with a gun and shoot you. I'm intentionally doing that.
Yeah.
That person is, we're not talking, he's intentionally trying to knock Gronk unconscious. That is absolutely to do him harm. There is no question. He's not there just to get the ball. If he is taking his, and what he doesn't realize is that he's hitting his own head, and he's also causing himself to have a concussion.
Yeah, and the concern is that it's seen on TV, kids see it, and they mimic it because it's successful, and it just regenerates itself.
Then people have these symptoms of brain fog, headaches, sleep disorders. A lot of people, they don't realize that when they come in and they're coming and telling me they're feeling anxious or they're not sleeping well, and we're not talking about the obvious people who are coming in with concussions, I mean, that have been diagnosed. But when I start to go do their history, I have found out, oh, yeah, number one cause of concussions is falls. Okay, and then think about you being in your auto accidents. You watch right now this past winter how many auto accidents there were. And I'm going to give you one statistic. It's going to blow you away. At the Boston Marathon, that blast, within 1/4 mile of that blast, there was 20,000 people who have a brain injury from that blast and do not know it.
Wow.
And because what they're going to go to the doctor for is from either the physical injuries that they got from the blast or from the PTSD, from the trauma from the blast. But those symptoms, many of the symptoms, they're not sleeping and they're not having their headaches, which will be equated to either the shrapnel or from the trauma, is they didn't realize that the compression, it's no different than an IED. that when we have people from blast injuries, I work with people in from Afghanistan and from have brain injury from blast injuries, and I wrote a whole report, put it in the Boston Globe, and this has not been followed through. There's, I'm telling you, over 20,000 who have been totally misdiagnosed, and their brain, the concussion has not been addressed.
Talked a little bit when we talked earlier. You talked about restorative sleep.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that and the different kinds of sleep.
For the brain to heal, you know, if you're in chronic pain, you have ADD, you have a stroke, the only way your body, you have irritable bowel syndrome, any of these things, you have to understand it is coming from your brain. Your brain is controlling your autonomic nervous system, which is your gut, your heart, your breathing, and it's registering pain. The only way that those whole system is going to heal is through having restorative sleep, and that is means that you go through REM, non-REM, REM, non-REM. And as I was telling the other day, that the best way to picture that is two different ways. Is one is to think of the Tobin Bridge. If you're going to fix the bridge, you have to stop traffic, and then you repair it, but then you have to let the traffic go. You can't be always just repairing. And so you fix the bridge, let some people go, fix the bridge, let it go. And I said most visually is with if somebody has a dog, they can see the dog. What happens when the brain is repairing itself, it paralyzes the peripheral nervous system. And if you've seen a dog, when they're going to sleep, you'll see that their legs go out and they're dead weight, and then a little while later you see them, their legs are moving, they're barking, they're dreaming. And then they go back to being, look like they're paralyzed, and they can't move, dead weight, till they're very flaccid again, and they're barking and all that. That is the REM, non-REM, REM, non-REM, that you need to, you have to go through 8 times at night to get restorative, for your brain to repair.
Wow. And on the average, how many people actually get that?
Right now, I would say about 40%.
40%. How much in your practice or in your travels, how much of the population is sleep deprived?
I would say 99.
And what are the ways to combat that?
Well, one, before we go in that, when I say about the sleep problem, we're talking about you can have hyposomnia, meaning that people are sleeping all the time. That, you know, you'll find them at their desk sleeping. You'll find them everywhere. They're falling asleep at the cars. That's one. Insomnia is either trying to go to sleep, and they have trouble going to sleep, and then they fall asleep for the rest of the night. Or what is typical, especially with people at a certain age, is that you go to sleep, and you wake up several times, and then go back to sleep, and then you wake up, and you're up for a few hours. I have a friend who, she tells me, she probably gets up 4 times during the night. And if I told her, let's go take a nap right now, she just couldn't go take a nap.
No, you can't. I do that, and I wake up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I will, I'll go get the Sudoku from the paper and do that, or you know, watch or read a book or something until I can get my eyes get heavy enough to need to go back to sleep.
So to answer your question, there's several methods. One is, again, neurofeedback, which is retraining your brain and re-regulating. It's a little bit similar to operant conditioning. You know, if you tell the dog to sit and they get a reward for sitting, they sit more because they're going to get the reward of the cookie. And the CES device, as I said, is an FDA approved. And all this is on my website. I have all the different types of sleep problems and all the different methods is on my website of drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. Or in my 2 books, I have a whole chapter on sleep. But to answer your question is that taking Ambien, absolutely not. The hallucinations are absolutely bad. A lot of the medications for sleep only cause people to have other very bad side effects. You know, people take Benadryl. Yeah, Benadryl's great for allergic reactions, but a lot of people take it for sleep. And so there are certain medications that if someone has really chronic, their MD will help them. But going back through heart rate variability breathing, a certain way of learning how to breathe so that your heart and your brain, the autonomic nervous system, is in sync. And that is, we do that, and that's heart math. I have the equipment on my website, and is that it's learning to get the brain and heart coordinated so that when you are stressed, that you can calm the fight-flight area, because that's what's happening, is you start thinking, and then you're getting anxious, and you're thinking, oh, should I do this for work? I didn't do that. Oh, I haven't planned, and your mind is racing. So doing that, hypnosis is very effective. So there's various methods that really absolutely have been effective for sleep.
Well, I share a cute anecdote with you about sleeping, and then we have to go to our next guest. But years ago, when I worked in the public sector, I was in the chain of people who, once the superintendent of schools called school off, I would get a call, and I would call the transportation and the operations people and tell them there's no school that day. Well, the usually call between 5:30 and 6 is when the call had to be made.
Oh, yeah.
This particular day, the superintendent decided at 2 o'clock in the morning that they weren't going to have school that day, so he called me at 2:30. I got up. I made all my phone calls. I went back to bed. I went back to sleep. I woke up a half an hour later, and I said, did he really call? Or did I dream it? But I had already made my calls.
Right.
So there wasn't going to be any school anyway.
Right.
The question is, when I drove to work, was I going to get in trouble, or was it on the level? But anyway, but thank you. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best. I hope you
I just like to give your audience my phone number.
Sure.
Of 800-500-9971. That's 800-500-9971. And I want to emphasize that part of what I do, not only do I treat, but I help people, as I said, locally, nationally, and internationally, so that find out what is the best treatment for them, and I help them find the appropriate provider wherever they are, anywhere worldwide. Okay?
Great. Thank you again. Have a good
day. And my website again is drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. Thank you for having me on your show.
Great. Take care, Doc. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Fabulous Fridays and Sunday brunch are back at the Gloucester House. World-renowned for its lobster dishes and fresh seafood specialties, the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, uses only locally caught, fresh North Atlantic seafood, offering traditional dining as well as catering to your private function needs. There is something for everyone and every occasion at the Gloucester House. Owned and operated by the Linquata family since 1959, they offer fabulous Friday lunch and dinner specials. And don't forget Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. For more information, go to GloucesterHouse.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Christine Cuccinello. Christine, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Well, we usually start out with a bio, and I certainly want to start there, but I know that you have an interesting and compelling story to share with our listening audience. So without limiting a time of bio, tell us your story.
Okay, so my name's Christine Cuccinello. I'm a woman in long-term recovery, and I'm here to tell my story and give support, strength, and hope to everyone that may be suffering from substance use disorder, and let everybody know that recovery is 100% possible. You need to have the determination, dedication, and strength to get you through and to succeed. And you really want to want it in order to succeed. So I began using drugs at the age of 19. My doctor started prescribing me pain medication for my back. I suffered from fibromyalgia, I still do, at the age of 19. So she started prescribing me pain medication, and, you know, I started taking that for a while, but it stopped working. And when I got out, I went to college after high school. I had mental health issues. I couldn't go to class. All I was doing was sleeping. So I decided, I couldn't do my work. So I decided to come home. That's when I started hanging out with a different crowd. They were from a different town. So they were using Oxycontin. I started using them, Oxycontin with them. And that was soon to be an everyday thing, blowing through tons of money. And then, a couple months later, I started with the heroin because it was cheaper. And that's when my life went downhill from there. So I was in and out of jail. I was held in jail a couple times for about a month to get into a program in Worcester. So they didn't want me out on the street until they got me into a program. So I ended up going into a program. There I found out I was pregnant with my first daughter. I graduated the program after 6 months. I stayed clean till my daughter was about 7 months old, and then I started using again. A few months after that, I got DCF called on me for neglect of my daughter, and I got her taken from me. I wasn't allowed to see her, and that was very hard for me, because my family wasn't even allowed to bring her to see me. I had to move out of the house. And so I wanted to get clean. I really did, but I was a constant relapser. I couldn't stay clean. I was in every single detox that you could imagine. I told my family that I was going to get clean, that I was sorry for everything that I did. I stole from my family. I stole the most valuable possession from them. I would steal my mother's credit card and leave her without any money to pay the bills. I stole, like I said, the most valuable
valuable possessions, like my grandmother's jewelry that my grandmother had given my mother, just everything. There's a lot of stuff that my mom doesn't have anymore because of my using. So finally, I was sentenced to 6 months in Framingham in 2009. And before I go there, I just wanted to say that, I almost caused a very bad car accident on the highway. I rear-ended someone while falling asleep behind the wheel, and the car flipped over up in the air. Not my car, the other car. Good thing the guy was okay, but it scared the ever-living crap out of me. I started stealing from stores. I basically stole from my family and stores to get what I needed. But then I got sentenced to jail in 2009 to Framingham, and the judge told me if I came back after that, then it would be more time that I would have to spend in jail. So I ended up staying clean after 2009. But my mental health wasn't all stable. So I lost my second daughter, my other daughter. I had another daughter. She's 7 right now. I lost her, as well. And I didn't get custody back of my other daughter, my older daughter. So at that time, I couldn't see both of my daughters. I'll tell you, in a 10-year stint while I was using, I got 1951 A's called on me by DCF, and I have that on my record through probate. So I wasn't able to see my girls at all, and I was heartbroken. So DCF thought I was still using, but I wasn't. I had mental health issues that weren't under control at the time. So I, did everything that I could. I went to domestic violence programs. I did a parenting class. I did everything that they asked me to do. I only could see my daughter through supervision for half an hour, with people staring at me, wondering if I was going to, hurt my kids or be high at the time. And it wasn't a good feeling at all. So now I've been clean for almost 9 years in April. And, it took me a long time to get here. I own my own nonprofit organization now. It's called Rising Above Addiction Incorporated. I just got everything together within the last year. I volunteer. I do recovery coaching through my organization. I'm actually trying to get recovery coaches in the courthouses, in all the courthouses statewide.
Help us understand what a recovery coach does or in what it would do and so forth.
Okay, so a recovery coach is basically for resources. We help overcome obstacles and barriers. We are also a non-active, non-judgmental listener. We help overcome negative thinking with positive thinking. We help with housing. We help we help with everything. And we also... I'm sorry, I'm just trying to I'm just trying to gather something here. So what a recovery coach is that we overcome obstacles and barriers. We use an approach called motivational interviewing, shown to improve engagement and treatment and outcomes. We also educate clients about which treatment approaches are evidence-based and what are not. Recovery coaches are not only work with individuals with substance use disorder, but help and support family members, friends, and loved ones that have been affected by another's addiction. Assist with employment, housing, educational needs, also connections to mental health resources when desired, connections to meetings through multiple pathways, crisis response, and resources to those that are currently struggling and seeking treatment and recovery options.
Christine, can I interrupt here?
Sure.
Yeah, my name is Rick Moore. I kind of own this thing, but Josh, this is Josh's show. But I'm a former educator, and I wonder, you know, it seems to me that you've gone through stuff that a lesser person might not have survived. And obviously, as a parent, the service you offer is amazing, because young kids, especially young parents, can get caught up in this stuff and not have any clue about life experience, not have any support system, but have a child. And having a child, of course, changes everything. But is there something in common with maybe some of the younger parents that you've dealt with? Is there a common thread in where they just don't understand that they are a parent during this addiction, and that somehow you're able to get them to focus back on the issue that they are a parent and the child is so important? I don't know if you know what I'm trying to ask, but I have a sense that when you're in an addiction or when you're an alcoholic, you kind of don't really care about a lot of other stuff except getting your next drink or whatever.
Absolutely.
So is there that kind of common thread where you have to kind of bring the person back to reality and bring him back to himself or herself and focus on the child? Because I know that 99% of every single parent wants his child.
Yes, absolutely. You know, my mother tried doing everything for me, and, you know, I wouldn't listen. I did what I wanted to do. They always, you know, said, "Christine, you got to stop this. Christine, you got to stop this." You know, but I wouldn't listen. I did what I wanted to do. The drug was so more important than my kid, even my kid. You know, I hate to even say that, but it was like that. That was my mentality at the time. Like, it was so more important than anything else in the world. Than, you know, and to get my next high, it was so more important than anything else. I don't know if I answered your question, but families that are going through this, you know, you really.
I think you hit on, Christine, I think you hit on the perfect point, exactly, because what you're saying is someone else can tell you, but it's got to be you. And where you have gone through this, it must be great for people to work with you who are having this problem to say, hey, wait a minute, this woman has been through it, she knows exactly what I'm talking about, and look at her, she's made it.
Yes, absolutely, and I never thought I would make it. I really didn't. I went through a couple really bad overdoses, and they didn't think I was going to make it, and I did. But, you know, families that are going through this, you can't make your child. You can't make your child get help. They have to want the help.
What was the thing? At what point did you hit the low that prompted you to turn it around?
When I went into jail, when I got sentenced to jail for 6 months, mm-hmm. that was my wake up call.
Okay.
When I got sentenced to Framingham for 6 months, that was my total wake up call. So I you know, I know a lot of people that those aren't their wake-up calls. I was in jail with people, with women that were in there for 5 years and getting out, and the first thing on their mind was to get high. So now they're offering the Vivitrol shot to everybody that leaves jail now, but not everybody, you know, wants it.
And the Vivitrol shot does what?
What?
The Vivitrol shot does what?
It blocks the opioid receptors, so you can't get high.
Okay.
It comes in a shot. You go once a month, and it blocks the opioids. But this strong stuff that's out right now, it can go through the Vivitrol, and you can pass away from it. Because there's some really strong stuff on the street right now. And they're telling everybody to please use with someone that's not using. I just had a friend that passed away, and he passed away with a friend that was also using, so they found both of them. And that was cocaine that they were using. So there's some lethal batches going around Lowell. So I really, really want to make a change. I really want to, you know, stop this epidemic. You know, there's too many beautiful people dying. And my story, you know, there's so much more to my story that it would probably take up a few hours.
Okay. But
I just wanted to go through, you know, a little bit of it. You know, not the whole story,
sure,
together, but just, you know, parts of it. But, you know, I can, you know, I wanted to open up my own halfway house when I got clean, my own sober house. I didn't know about recovery centers when I got clean, but my goal is to open up a recovery center in Burlington in the near future. I mean, recovery is 100% possible when you really want it.
How do people, and what do you advise, Christine, if people do want to be part of your program and they want to learn more? And I'm thinking especially for those friends and parents and relatives of the addicted who just want to get some information and maybe get started on this. What's the best way for people to go about it? Whether the person wants to do it himself, herself, or not, what do you suggest the first step is?
Well, the first step is for the suffering that is going through substance use disorder is to reach out for help.
Well, that's what I'm asking. How do they reach out to help for you? That's what I'm asking.
To me?
Yes. Yes.
They can... I'm online. If you Google Rising Above Addiction, Inc., I'm online. I'm on Google. I also support parents that have lost their children to DCF custody or foster care due to substance use disorder, and I act as an advocate in court for them. Also, you know, anyone can get in touch with me. I'm on Facebook. Rising Above Addiction, Inc. is on Facebook. You know, I'm looking for more people to put me in on their for resources mm-hmm. for people to get in touch with me.
Have you reached out to local high schools?
I haven't yet, but that's my next step.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wanted to go into the high schools and start talking.
Yeah.
To the students about addiction, and I really also think that the middle schoolers need the education as well, because it starts in the middle school.
Wow.
Drug addiction starts in the middle school, and you know, I have a daughter that's in middle school, and she tells me all the time that, you know, her friends talk about that, drugs. So you know, I do talk to my daughter about it. You know, I have told her that I had an issue with it, and, you know, She tells me that she never wants to do that.
You know, that's good.
up and down, that she never wants to do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Christine, one more final question for me. Is spirituality a part of your life now?
Spirituality? Not really. But are you guys still there?
Yeah, yeah. No, we're here.
Okay. Not really, but I hate saying that, but I don't use spirituality as part of my recovery.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you should hate saying that, because that's a question that an outsider might say, well, what is wrong with you? But when you're talking to someone who's been through this, they know exactly what you're talking about. So don't be afraid to say that, and thank you for answering it.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I do believe in it, but it's just not my thing.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
I get that. Well, listen, I have to bail out, but Josh will finish up with you. It's a very powerful story, Christine, and God bless you. Good luck with you and your children and all those you work
Thank
with.
You.
It's a very noble cause, and I'm so glad you have made it. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, I know that I've talked to my business partner, who's the district governor for Rotary District 7930, and we're going to try to get you to on the circuit to talk to Rotary clubs up and down the North Shore to tell your story, and from there that probably could lead to folks in those clubs reaching out to the school systems to help you get in the door to tell your story.
Okay. That would be great. That would be great.
Okay. Well, thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. And am I free to give your email address out?
Absolutely.
All right. It's christine0507@gmail.com. Again, christine0507@gmail.com. And that's Rising Above Addictions, Inc., which you can find on Facebook and by Google again. Thank you, Christine, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
Wow. Yeah. Just plain wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Good grief. What a story. Two stories you've had today. My head is spinning, and wow.
We got a lot of people in the queue for future shows, too, so...
Now, what do you got lined up here that you can mention?
I have Heidi Hailman, who we spoke with briefly at the showcase a couple of weeks ago when we did that in Danvers. She's going to be a guest next week. I'm hoping to have Rebecca Reynolds from the Manship Project. I had done an interview with her on the recorder, except it didn't record, so hopefully we'll find a way to... Where she is, she can't... There isn't good cell coverage, and they don't have a landline, so we'll get to figure out where she can go to talk to us. And also, we'll have the president of the Newburyport City Council on to talk to us about what's going on in Newburyport.
Alrighty, sounds like a plan, and we are scheduled for next Friday. We'll be back. This has been Trending Now with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Have a great weekend, and happy Easter, and those of you who are celebrating the Passover, the best of everything to you. I don't know that there is a proper greeting for that, but...
You're probably happy Passover.
No, I don't think that's it, but I would say that, you know, that... That the fact that the two holidays are sort of coinciding is great. We need a little more unity on this planet.
Yeah.
So have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.